Blow the horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama,
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, according to the message boards, it sounds like the wheels have come off our season,
much like Auburn or Arkansas. Or at a minimum, we struggled with Towson like LSU did. So there's no way that we beat an upstart 3-1 SEC West opponent by 19 in a very late kickoff the week just prior to our bye, right?
Man, that is exactly what we did. But such is life, and it's a good problem to have to be a Bama fan with the expectations as high as they are right now.
You know, it used to be sort of a tallest midget situation when we would compare games across a season. This is almost like which is the least attractive supermodel, right?
You know, it's... Even after going back and watching the tape, there's a lot of things that I can be nitpicky about because, you know, we've heard Saban for 5 years now talk about do the little things and fundamental football. And from a doing the little things, this was probably the worst game they've had all season.
There's no doubt about it. I this was our worst game of the season. We lost the second half. We trailed at one point in the season, the first time we've done that in regulation. In nearly a year, we settled for field goals instead of converting them for touchdowns. We did all of these things that, you know, by themselves are not attractive, and we certainly can pick at them, and they're worthy of discussion. But I'm just pleased that we won by 19 in a game like this. We've always sort of, even under Saban, even under other coaches, we've been lethargic that last game going into a bye week. That's probably the mother of all distractions in the heat of football season. So all things together, I'm not that disappointed. But when we start to dissect it, it is the first game in which our starters had to play all four quarters. You know, there's things that we can pick apart. So why don't you grab one and we'll wrestle with it.
Okay, man. Sounds good. The first thing that kind of jumped out at me is we just really didn't have the balance in this game that we've had all season long. The announcers have kind of kidded about the fact that at some points in the game, we've had like identical rushing and passing, which is just freaky. But it seems like a formula that works for Alabama is for AJ to have about 20 attempts and for us to carry the ball about 40 times. And maybe most teams in America could say, yeah, that's what we'd like too. But AJ had more attempts than he's had all season, and he just didn't look as comfortable. And he was carrying more of the load. And we need to be rushing more than we did and not putting his – I guess what I'm trying to say is the offensive line does so much better against the run, just smash football. And so we don't need A.J. dropping back to attempt 30 passes.
Yeah, I mean, the distribution was a little off. I mean, we had 34 runs and 30 passes, 147 yards rushing and 180 passing. Those are pretty representative. Those are pretty, you know, evenly distributed. They're not exact like we've seen before, but they're not bad. They're not skewed too far one way or the other.
But the point is, well, the point I'm making real quick is AJ, as far as managing the game and making some big plays and distributing the ball, I like it better when he's dropping back and attempting 20 passes, completing 13 or 14 of them, and we're rushing over 40 carries and at 5 yards a carry. We're in second and five and third and four, and we're not settling for four field goals when we're doing that. And so our offense, I think, runs better when there's 40-something rushing attempts in the ballgame.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think we seem sluggish just across the board. You know, if we had another 100 yards of offense and, you know, however we distributed that, I think we'd all kind of feel a little bit better if we converted on some of those touchdowns instead of field goals. We had a couple just third down conversions we couldn't get and had to kick four field goals. It's always hate the fact when, you know, our first two possessions are two of the first three possessions, we drive the field, have to settle for field goals, and we're up 6-0, you know, you can almost trip and fall and score a touchdown. And what does Ole Miss do? They drive, put together a short drive, and they do score a touchdown, and then they do take the lead.
Well, that goes back. That goes back to, like we said, you know, in Atlanta in that Virginia Tech game a couple years ago. You know, you let a team stay in the game. Now, fortunately, you know, we had the superior talent, and so I remember turning to those around us when it was 7-6 and saying, "Hey guys, don't worry, it's going to be 37-10 in a couple hours." Well, that's kind of similar to how it turned out, but you know, I do think we have enough talent on this team, enough leadership on this team to overcome. And so I was kind of happy that we were down for the first time in the season.
Well, I was more annoyed by it than I was concerned or, you know, even afraid that we were going to lose. I knew that we'd continue to move the ball. It's almost a joke with no time running off the clock. We run a 99-yard kick return for a touchdown. And then in this ensuing three possessions by Ole Miss, they throw three consecutive interceptions. So it just seems when they took the lead, I kind of kidded that, okay, now they've pissed us off. We return it for a touchdown and intercept three passes. I think at that point, score 21 points in the second quarter.
Right.
Definitely game over at that point.
Well, it goes back to your complacency or your sluggish comment. You know, it's like this team needs something to give them a swift kick in the ass. And as soon as they get that, they're fired up. You know, whether it's a special teams, you know, misplay in one of the previous games or whether it's a big sack or a big interception, it's like they need something to get them going. And so that would be a little disturbing if I saw a team on the schedule in the horizon that concerns me other than LSU. But I mean, we gave up 14 points. You know, it's only the second opponent that's even scored two touchdowns all season. I just think, like we said in the preseason, that we're going to be able to outscore the other team in most games. And so we're going to sit here with games like this and we're going to nitpick stuff even though we kicked their ass.
Sure. That's fair. Well, let's talk about some of the positive. What really stood out for you on the offensive side of the ball?
You know, on the offense, you know, there wasn't a lot that I was really happy with. We didn't distribute the ball as evenly as he normally does. We didn't get Michael Williams involved after he had four catches the week before. I guess the only thing that really jumped out at me was probably, you know, Amari Cooper. Well, that jumped out at everybody. You know, he seemed like he's starting to settle in as maybe AJ's favorite receiver.
Yeah, I think he was incredible. You know, eight catches, two touchdowns, 84 yards. I think we very quietly did distribute the ball. We completed passes to 10 different receivers, which is a nice big number. But by far and away, Amari Cooper was the leading receiver. And boy, he had quite a breakout after Andrew went down.
And maybe it's the distribution of those balls, right? I mean, it's you know, looking at the stat sheet, okay, we had five guys that caught one pass each. Okay, technically that's distributing the ball, but you know, you can't go to one guy eight times and then the next guy's three and then quickly followed by two. I think for this team to be successful, they got to have four or five guys out there each catching three or four balls, so the defense doesn't really know where you're going with the ball.
Right. No, that's fair, but it was good to see Amari break out. I think we've been trying to force the ball to him a couple times, and it seemed when DeAndre went down, Amari just stepped up, started running, I think, some of those same routes that we see DeAndre running, and he really had a breakout performance.
He did. What do you think about the fact that we didn't see more productivity from Kevin Norwood or Kenny Bell, you know, our most veteran receivers in that situation? I mean, obviously, like you said, it seems like some of the plays that Amari would have shared with DeAndre suddenly just gets him, you know, his number called, and great, next man stepped up. Glad you stepped up in a big way. But, you know, I'm kind of scratching my head that, you know, Kevin Norwood or Kenny Bell should have had five or six catches in this ball game in light of those circumstances.
Well, I think Norwood, it has something to do with his injury. He did not participate in most of the game last week, nursing a foot injury. Kind of read that after the fact this past week. He did play some on Saturday, but it looks like maybe he's not up to full speed. and we limited, you know, I'm projecting here, but we maybe limited his participation going into the bye week so he'd have a little more ability to take advantage of the rest. I see him coming on strong in this second. It's not really second half of the season, but we'll call it that. In the second segment of the season, I see him really coming on strong. Kenny Bell's one of those guys, to me, and I'm going to undersell him just a little bit. He seems a one-trick pony, and we saw that show pony last week when, you know, he scored that, showed off his speed, scored that long touchdown. I don't know that he's good for much more than that. And because we did not really stretch the field, I guess I'm not that surprised that he only racked up a couple of catches.
Well, but one of those catches was a quick slant, and he has shown the ability to do the slant across the middle and take contact and use his speed. And I'm puzzled by him. I'll give you the Norwood injury, but I'm puzzled by Kenny Bell. And now with the injury to DeAndre White, you know, and the rotation of having five or six receivers, you know, running out there just reps wise, do you think Danny Woodson or Marvin Shin sees more snaps next after the bye week?
I would say Shin, but I see more probably Christian Jones involved. You're maybe surprised that Kenny Bell only got two catches. I'm probably a little more surprised that Christian Jones only got two. I think we do see some more productivity from them. I think we do involve more of the tight ends, but I think if I'm going to that, who is that next receiver? I think it very well could be Shin over Woodson.
Well, I was a little surprised that Woodson didn't see the field any at all, just because he had played in the last two ball games, and so has, you know, Marvin Shin for that matter, just due to how the games had gone. But Danny Woodson seems a little more physical, a little more ability to block on running downs, and so that's why I think maybe a little more Woodson, just because I think he'll get in there and do the little things that Saban's going to want him out there, even though he might not get a lot of balls thrown his way. I think I guess what I'm saying is we need another guy to step in and block on the run. And DeAndre was in there a lot in those situations. And so we need a receiver to add to the rotation that can run block. And I think Woodson might can do that more than Shin.
And that's fair. It depends on what we're looking for that guy to do. Someone that can come in and maybe be a little more dynamic. A name that we didn't mention is Cyrus Jones. We've seen him perform well. Did not catch a ball on Saturday, but we've seen him perform well. Another true freshman. I see him getting in some of the rotation as well.
What else jumped out at you on offense?
Unfortunately, what really jumped out to me on offense is just the injuries. When D. Hart goes down, DeAndre White goes down, they're both lost for the season. We suddenly start to get thin at the running back position with the loss of Fowler early in the season and the loss of D. Hart. If we wanted to wear our pessimistic hat, we could say Eddie Lacy's a little dinged up and we have two true freshmen. And that's our three running backs.
We did see a lot of Eddie Lacy. You know, I say a lot of Eddie Lacy. It seems like the formula is Eddie Lacy 20 touches, Yeldon 10, and okay, we're gonna share four or five to one of the other guys by committee. And were you surprised, given the D. Hart injury, that we didn't see Drake get a single carry?
Well, even if D. Hart had not been injured, I would, going into this game, categorically say we'll see four running backs. You know, almost at a minimum, we'll see four running backs. And so the fact that we only saw three, and then you add on to that the fact that D. Hart was injured, you know, just listening to the radio as we were at the stadium watching the game, there was some report that Lacy had, apparently not significant because he kept going out there, but that he had tweaked a hamstring. And so you take all of that. And yes, I am very surprised that we did not see some Kenyon Drake out there.
Well, you know, I even turned to you in the ball game and made a comment, why is D. Hart in here? We haven't seen T.J. Yeldon. And as I went back and looked at the sequence of plays, you know, Eddie Lacy comes in for the first two series. Okay, that's what he normally does. And then Yeldon would come in. Well, Yeldon just got one carry for 3 yards. And then next thing you know, in the second quarter, when we get the ball back and I see the D. Hart and I'm like, well, what's this? Well, that's why I miss Yeldon. He only had one damn carry when he was in on that one series. I was surprised by that. It was an early insertion of DeHart given what looks like only one carry for Yeldon.
Yeah, and absolutely, it was early. You know, this is kind of where, if you want to turn this into a personal interest story, you really feel bad for DeHart. He was maybe being buried in the depth chart, started to make a name for himself in special teams, really started showing some heart, and maybe the coach gave him the nod and said, look, you're going to do that for me in these other roles. You're going to practice. Presumably he's practicing that way. If you're going to do that for me and you're going to show me that, I'm going to get you out there and I'm going to get you some more carries in the meaty part of the ball game. And so he's in there contributing. He gets hurt on a punt return, but you know, my whole point is he's getting more opportunity. He's cashing in his opportunity, and that's the game he gets hurt in.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, that one play where he came in and he was calling in the backfield that there was a corner blitz coming on Cyrus's, you know, left shoulder there. And then when the guy comes in, he chips him just enough to give AJ some time. And, you know, this was early before his injury. And I'm like, well, goodness, he's, you know, that's going to pay dividends for him in Saban's eyes. So you're right. He was trying to do the little things.
Yeah, he was doing them. And then that's where he gets hurt. And so, you know, kind of feel bad for the kid in that way. Kenyon Drake, I think, is going to step up. He's going to, you know, be forced more into an opportunity. He's going to have to materialize on those little things. And I think I'm going to back into one of the quote-unquote controversies that you and I have been talking through. I think the injury to DeHart after the injury to Jalston Fowler, I think that goes a long way to solve.
I know what you're about to say.
I think this goes a long
Sims.
Yes, this goes a long way to solving our backup quarterback question, because I think Blake Sims is going to start to get some reps in practice at the running back position, and I think Callaway will as well. And so I think we've got two guys kind of ready positioned to sort of migrate into getting some of those snaps. And I think that gives more of those backup snaps to Philip Ellie. So that was, I guess, a very transparent transition there. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think Brent Callaway is going to get some opportunities and practice. And I think that so is Blake. And it's going to be like, okay, guys, y'all didn't have a chance before. You know, y'all were the sixth and seventh guys. Well, now you're no longer the sixth and seventh guys. You're the fourth and fifth guys. Go earn it. Show us that you want some opportunities. And, you know, it's a good problem to have. They're talented kids coming out of high school. And, you know, we'll see how bad they want it.
Yeah, we did run Callaway out of the H-back position, did catch a pass. We targeted him another time down the sideline out of that H-back position. I think we were trying to get a mismatch with a linebacker, and he ran a little wheel route. Definitely showed some speed, you know, maybe better ball placement or him fighting for the ball a little bit more. He could have gotten that, but showed some confidence that we're going to put him out there. We're going to go to him, and it looks like maybe he's going to get on the field in some more capacity as the season progresses.
You know, I was about to cut on Callaway and say you can't count a catch when technically you can, but, you know, his catch was for minus 2 yards, so yippee. But that really wasn't his fault, and that kind of transitions into, you know, beating up on AJ a little bit. You know, last week it was Barrett's turn, and this week it's AJ's. You know, I don't know if he's been listening to Tony Barnhart or if he's been listening to some of the national pub talking about his name possibly out there for the Heisman. You've thrown 10 touchdowns through the first three games, blah, blah, blah. But his timing was off. He made some bad decisions. You know, on some of those drives, there was 3rd and 7 opportunities, and he'd throw the ball for a 2 or 3 yard completion where he could see guys were just 2 yards off the receiver. There's no way the guy's going to make 3 or 4 guys miss for a first down to keep the drive going. I think he had a bad day. I mean, like I said, they won 33-14. We've been high on him a lot, but this was not one of his better outings.
No, and we start saying that about a number of guys, and at some point you have to give credit to the opponent. You know, Ole Miss is a team that maybe we're reluctant to give credit to based on some of their recent past, but, you know, they're doing something right with Hugh Freeze. I know they got blown out by Texas, but you know, they were 3-1 coming in. They're very competitive. They fought against Texas, even with the score down, even with being way down. They certainly came to fight against us, and they gave us a handful. And so, when you know, some of our guys had bad days, yes, but I want to give a little bit of the credit to the opponent. I think they caused some of that.
Well, that's fine. I'm not quite as willing to give as credit as you are, I guess, just after, you know, just looking at the schedule of who they've played to have those three wins right now. I think that we made some really bad decisions on two of those field goal drives. One was a 12-play drive. One was a 13-play drive in the fourth quarter. And that's just a killer. I mean, those last two drives of the game, we controlled the ball for 13 and a half minutes of the 15-minute fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
From a taking the air out of the ball, Saban had to be beside himself. But to have the ball for 25 plays in the fourth quarter and put up 120 of your measly 300 yards on those last two drives and you can't cash in at least one of them, that's just frustrating.
Right. Right.
What else jumped out at you on offense, if anything?
Well, at the risk of maybe stealing your mini game ball, I think Kellen Williams came in and, you know, blocked a guy across the field. I think it's another instance of a lineman, you know, having his mouthpiece ready, having his helmet ready. Someone blows a shoe, he runs right in there, you know, comes in, runs his play, no timeout, no discombobulation, runs his play, goes back out. Well-oiled machine in terms of who's that next lineman stepping up. I've probably been surprised at the number of different linemen we've come in when we've needed one person like that. We kind of thought it would be one person coming in, you know, almost for every situation, but we've had three or four now that have come in at different times for kind of that one or two play situation. But I'm just impressed when our guys are ready to come in, even though right. They're not expecting, you know, who's expecting a backup lineman to have to come in? They don't rotate in, but when they're ready, that just speaks to, you know, their character, their discipline, their readiness, as well as the coaching.
Well, I think it's a bigger point, man. I mean, I agree with all that, but I think it's a bigger point is in years past, we would have slid a Barrett Jones to one of those other positions, right? And so we talked about in the preseason, okay, Ryan Kelly's going to be the number six guy. And maybe that just speaks to the better depth as far as their confidence in the left guard or the right tackle, right guard coming in Aries' case. Maybe that is a little bit more confidence and better competition between the first string and second string than we've had for several years now.
Sure. I think it also speaks to, and I kind of want to pick at this just a little bit. I think it speaks to, you know, okay, no one's injured. We're just tying a shoe. And so it's just a play or two. Maybe we don't do a whole shuffle. Let's grab, you know, the legitimate backup and bring him in. But that means there's five guys or at least three or four guys over there that are ready at any time to come in.
They're paying attention. They have to.
And so, yeah. And so we've talked about in times past, well, maybe we have to move someone to accommodate that. Well, that's without saying that we're doing all of this over a timeout.
Right. Right. And in some cases, we're not even calling a timeout.
Yeah.
I think in this case, we didn't even call a timeout.
No, that's what I'm saying. And let's be realistic. We're talking about rotation and how we might handle this in the past. Probably the best way we'd handle it is call timeout so we can tie a shoe because we can't bring in anybody else.
Right, right.
So
no, that's true. That's true. But I am interested to see how we handle this adversity. And you never like to see injuries, but you know, for the number one team in the country, okay, you've dropped two running backs and you've dropped two wide receivers at this point between the preseason and, you know, the regular season. And so a lot of teams can't lose four skill players like that and keep it together.
No.
I think we can, but a lot of teams can't.
Yeah, I think we can too. You know, one of probably the most easily forgotten you know, circumstances is the 09 season when we win the national title. We go without Dante for most of the season, and we go without Damian Square for most of the season. And those were frontline starters on the defense. We still had a very powerful defense that season and went on to win the national title. So we're talking about guys, you know, granted we're losing guys, and I'm not trying to minimize that, except for maybe I am. These guys are in a rotation, and you could argue that we might miss some of these guys less than we missed Hightower or Square back in 09.
We know we're a long ways away from the days where we would have a guy injured and he was going to be our starting nose tackle. And oh, by the way, he played on the offensive line in the spring before.
Sure, absolutely. And it was almost a pit in your stomach, like, well, we haven't even started the season, but, you know, maybe next year we'll be better.
No, that's true. Let's flip to defense. Tell me what jumped out at you on defense. I mean, there were some good plays. We had some good things happen on defense.
Yeah, we racked up 5 sacks. I think that was good. Quite a number of tackle for losses. I think we had maybe 6 or 8 of those. You know,
good distribution too on both of those categories. Absolutely. A lot of guys contributing there.
Absolutely. We get 3 interceptions, and so we get all these sort of these big money plays, type plays. We played almost exclusively in the nickel. I only saw us in dime once, and that was on a 3rd and 17. I don't think I saw us in sort of our non-base base. You know, we were all in our nickel base.
Right.
All night. But I don't know if anything in particular or anyone's performance really stood out. But because all of those significant stats were distributed, it's just nice to see that production come from a lot of different places.
It is. And, you know, I guess the biggest thing that I would touch on there, which we probably didn't touch on, we touched on a little bit on the offensive side of the ball, is, you know, it just – once again, trying to find things to pick apart, it would have been nice to get some more of those backups, some reps. And so maybe the second string guys didn't get on the field as much as we've had a luxury of the previous 3 weeks.
Right, and that's true. You know, one thing I'll call out, and we've talked about him before, and it's really coming to fruition what we've talked about before, Pagan is getting a lot of reps on defense. We're seeing him get a lot more activity. A lot more contribution, and he's one of those guys that just we continue to believe that he's going to grow into something special. So it's good to see him earn his playing time and perform well with it.
No, that is true, and he's got a good size and a good makeup for, you know, for the position that he's playing, and I actually think that, you know, he could play defensive end or in the gap inside if we need him, but that's where we've been. That's where we've kind of had to play him, you know, due to the injury to Ivory. Did you see the freshman? Did the freshman get many snaps in the ball game?
I'm looking at that now. I don't think he Darren Lake racked up any stats. I don't know that he contributed. I don't know that he got any playing time, and he certainly
it doesn't look like on the player participation he did play, and so. That's a little surprising, don't you think?
That is a little surprising. And so what that potentially speaks to with him not getting reps, Drake not getting reps, Norwood not getting very many reps, it makes you wonder how many of these guys are just banged up. They're not unable to play, but they're just banged up enough. And this get them some rest and some treatment, and this next part of the season they'll come back, you know, healthy and hungry.
Well, in the case of Darren Lake, real quick, we pull a red shirt off of him,
sure,
and bring him into the Arkansas game for his first playing time of the year, and so he's played the last 2 weeks, and then suddenly he doesn't play, and so that's what's so perplexing, because I didn't see any nick that he had, and so to your point. You pull his red shirt, you lose the guy in front of him who is banged up, and you don't play him. That's a very scratch the head moment.
Well, you'd think that he would have, even if Pagan is beating him out necessarily, you would think that he would get some reps, you know, some depth reps.
Right.
But it looks like maybe he still has some growing up and learning the defense to go. And so he may just not be ready. But I think he'll get some more reps as the season goes on. We'll have opportunities to play the backups. And so, assuming he is healthy,
you know, we'll see him again. And I think he's a good player. I think he's going to develop well for us. You know, we're at a point where maybe we're a little bit spoiled when freshmen play like freshmen.
That's fair. What did you think about, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about how well D. Milner did play. I thought Ballou did not have a great day. I thought the hurry-up offense really made Ballou struggle.
Sure.
Because if you're a JUCO and you're trying to pick up the system, and I don't care that you got in there in January, I mean, you know, if you're a new player in Saban's scheme, right, the hurry-up offense has got to really screw you up. I mean, Saban even said on his coaching show that that big pass that they completed over Ballou had more to do with we just weren't ready for the next play.
Yeah, and I think that I think that makes perfect sense, and I certainly would agree with that assessment. You come in and you can only learn as much as you can learn, and you can only experience as much as you can experience in that little, you know, limited time frame. And then so when you see a team that plays a style that you may not see but once a year, that's where you're going to spend lesser time preparing for that and getting practice reps against that than you are, you know, the type of offense, the types of attacks that you're going to see more regularly. So Milner, having been in the system, he knows almost what to default to better than the new guy.
Yeah, as far as Milner goes, I just think it's a huge contrast between the two, between the how they handled the adversity of the no huddle offense. But also, I just wanted to talk about Haha. As far as that one play with Milner, he kind of cost Milner his second pick of the ball game by not communicating there on that one play. That was just being picky again. That was frustrating. That could have been another good turnover.
Yeah, it's a situation, and we've actually seen that because I remember making the exact same comment Saturday night as I've made before, that either one of them could have caught that ball, but they get into each other's way, and Haha, the safety coming over, sort of a la Rashad Johnson, coming in to grab the ball, but the corner's in place, Milner, and so either one of them could have caught the ball. When they're both trying to catch the same ball in the same space, it gets batted away and knocked down, and that's happened at least twice, where it's been very clear that either guy could have caught the ball. They're just getting in each other's way, and so I don't know if it becomes, you know, like a center fielder kind of shortstop situation where somebody has to call the ball or what, you know, let's track the ball, but this look at where it's going to, because that would have been a nice another pick to have.
No, it would have. Hey, one other thing that I wanted to mention on defense that did jump out at me is while we had a lot of guys swarming to the ball, you know, we didn't set the edges as well as we have. And maybe that had more to do with Adrian Hubbard and Dixon being in the game a lot, just like we picked on Ballou. You know, maybe they were a little confused as well, but we gave up way too much on the edges compared to what we normally do.
Yeah, I think we were a little more aggressive in terms of crashing the edges instead of setting them. I know that Hubbard, I think Hubbard had a sack. He had definitely some tackles in the backfield. And so to me, that speaks more of him being aggressive than sort of being lost like an Alex Watkins. You know, so maybe we needed to pick our spots when we were going to attack and when we were going to set. And with their, you know, zone read and kind of pass offense, they play kind of a fluky kind of offense. And I think that gave us fits. And then running that out of a no huddle, there are principles that we saw on Saturday. And this is the kind of game, you know, if you want to spend your bye week analyzing Alabama football and projecting across the season ahead, go back and watch that Ole Miss offense again and just look at what they do and where they have success and pick you out a couple plays and watch for them the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that little throwing the ball behind the back, you know, throwing that ball in the flats in the backfield along the sideline edges. I mean, they're going to beat us over the head with that until we bring a safety up or we rotate a linebacker over. I mean, they did that a couple times on short down and distance. And I mean, after the second or third time, it's like, okay, I'm tired of seeing that crap. Come on, let's adjust.
Well, it'll be a little cutesy situation where we'll pick it off like we picked off
you know, the Tebow jump pass or something. You know, you'll beat us with it. Okay, now try to do that again.
Right. One other thing that would be obvious to most football fans, get them in long down and distance, and, you know, you're going to have more success. It was interesting that we did seem to put them in a second and long and third and long on a bunch of occasions. And we were able to, you know, we had, you know, two of our picks in those situations and four of our five sacks in those situations. So that was one good thing that we did, is we put them in a good down and distance for most of the night.
Yeah, we did. I thought that for the by and large, we played very well on defense. They racked up a total of 218 yards, which that's a small number when you think about it. But they gained 140 of those on their two scoring drives. And those were sustained drives. And so if we could have gotten them off the field, you know, let's just say halfway through those two drives, convert those into punts, maybe one's a field goal, then it's maybe a 10-point game. They're scoring 10 points, and they've got 70 yards of less offense. And so we start getting them down into the, you know, the 130, 140 range.
100-yard range.
Yeah. So, and then I think we're all kind of feeling better about the game in that situation. So there's a couple different ways to look at it. I thought, by and large, our defense played pretty well against that type of offensive attack.
Yeah, that they probably won't see the rest of the year.
And in that way, it reminded me a lot of the Georgia Southern game, where they played that triple option, and they ran up and down the field, you know, 220-something yards of rushing offense.
And we were all freaking out after that. Yep. Sure.
And that was, you know, last year's defense, which some will tell you, you know, might be one of the best college defenses ever. And little Georgia Southern puts up 220 yards rushing. What that tells you is if you play a fluky offense, you can have some success. And so I think that's where Ole Miss kind of made their hay, is with their fluky offense.
No, that's true. Anything else that jumps out at you on defense before we go to special teams?
No, carry us into special teams.
All right, if you're going to settle for field goals and have to attempt four, you know, at least we were 4 for 4. It's nice to see that Shelley was consistent when he came in the game.
It's not often that I drink a beer, but when I do, it's Dos Equis. So it's kind of like you don't want to have to settle for 4 field goal attempts, but if you do, you may as well hit them.
but normal stats, right, are 60% or so. And so for him to be 4 or 4, that is saying something. When his number was called, you know, he came in, and it kind of reminds me of the national championship game against LSU.
Sure.
From the perspective of, you know, when those field goals were happening early in the game, I remember turning to you and saying, yes, but Saban just wants to get up to make a team one-dimensional. And I truly, I mean, he'd never admit, I mean, I guess all teams do, but to him, he's like, yeah, I wanted touchdowns, but I got a great defense. I got my field goal kicker. I got Cade Foster now, with the help of the stupid rules, drilling it, you know, 5 yards deep in the end zone. Most teams aren't going to drive 80 yards on me consistently. And so now it's like, okay, I'll take them wherever I can get them. And as soon as I get up on you 15-3 or something, I got you, because now you got to pass the ball.
Sure. And you know, obviously, we want to make the field goals if we kick them. It just struck me funny the way you said it. And going 4 for 4, yeah, I think that's a great performance. Putting those points up consistently, you know, almost automatic. I think that is very important. I think it's very significant.
And we haven't had that for several years, I guess, is my other point, is that, yes, we have a good defense, but then we'd have a damn kicker miss field goals.
Sure.
And so right now, if we have a game where we're not putting it all together, and we can get up 16-3 because we've made 3 field goals, we still got your ass.
Yeah, it's a nice little thing to feel comfortable about. Whereas before, you're right. Oh, we get, you know, pins and needles. Or are we going to make these field goals? And so you're right. You're absolutely right. It's something to feel comfortable about. You run out there, you have 4 opportunities, you nail them. They're the short field goals. The short field goal versus a long field goal is the difference in the two LSU games. We broke that down, I thought, quite extensively last year. But to hit them, I think, is important. Now, I'm going to say this, though. If we're going to talk special teams and Cade Foster, it was more than just the rules that helped him. he has worked on his mechanics. I get the 5 yard differential, and that's not hurting, but there's
because it's halfway in the end zone where the ball keeps dropping.
There is so much more to it than that. And he was even more impressive. Now, he didn't have a long field goal just because we didn't have to kick one, but his kickoffs were so much more impressive to me. I just kept saying the ball is exploding off his foot. I mean, he showed, you know, we've raved about the LSU punter where he had this leg talent and the ball would explode off his foot. I'm not going to go so far as say that Kate Falter's there, but it's the closest thing that I can think of. I've not seen the ball just explode off a foot like it did, you know, 7 of 8 times. Now, there's one of them, he clearly got under it and he was clearly off his form. And then he came out the next time and literally nearly kicked it out of the stadium. He nearly kicked it out of the field of play. And that speaks to some confidence and some appropriate training on his technique. And so I'm going to continue to give my nod or give a nod in the direction of Kate Foster as long as he's doing that for us.
Well, I think he's improved by about 5 or 6 yards, which with the rule as well is huge. Because it was dropping between the goal line and 5, and now it's dropping halfway in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, which is a good problem to have, because that means we're putting points on the board. Not only is he doing it consistently, but by damn, you're having to do it 8 or 9 times a game.
Sure, absolutely.
And you're still doing it consistently.
Absolutely.
What do you think about punt return very quickly before we get off special teams? We were surprised that DeHart got those opportunities, and maybe we've talked about why that was. But do we see Christian Jones back at punt return, or do we see a Cyrus Jones or someone else inserted into that and more of a, okay, you're my kick return guy and I got another punt return guy. We got a bye week here to work somebody in.
I think both of those are the answers. I think it's an and solution instead of an or. I think we have Christian Jones who continues to be the guy, but we do work someone in, and over the course of the off week and the next couple of games, if someone comes in and demonstrates themselves, then we may see a split. But I think it's Christian at this point.
Okay. Anything else on defense before we talk about mini game balls?
No, carry us into the game balls.
Well, you stole my mini game ball on offense. You knew you were going to, so I'm just going to say DeHart. We've already talked about the reasons why, but it's a shame it ended like it did. But, you know, he was the epitome of doing the little things.
Is Tommy showing a little compassion there?
Man, he got in there. He got his head in there, and
you were kicking him off the team a couple of weeks ago.
I was definitely kicking him off the team or saying he was going to transfer, and he still might. He might be Saban's medical redshirt liability now that he's, you know, had 2 knee injuries. But he had shown me some grit with the special teams play in the previous weeks, and it's a shame that it happened because, like you said, when he came in the game in open space, that is his specialty. Maybe Saban could have called him the – I get you in space guy because he seemed to, and maybe that's why he was back on punt returns, because when you give him that little 5 or 10 yard head start, he seemed like he was making some good things happen.
Wow. That was just a nice tender moment. I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay. Whatever. Who's your guy on offense?
I'm going for reasons we've already discussed. I'm going with Jeremy Shelley. When you're 4 for 4 and you're a weapon at field goals, you know, putting the points up in that type of situation. Hopefully we're never in a situation like last season where we need field goals to help us win the game. But it's good to know that we have that asset available. And so I'm giving nod to 4 of 4. We'd have to crack open the history books to see, you know, when the last time we saw that type of performance. So I'm pleased with that.
All right. What about defense? Who do you give it to on defense?
Well, I've got 2 guys here, and we've mentioned one, so I'm going to go with the other. I'm going to give it to Vinny, just filling up the stat sheet, 6 tackles, half a sack, half a tackle for loss. He had a pass breakup, and on his pass breakup, he was blitzing the quarterback, and the quarterback was rolling out, and there was a screen setting up.
And this is just, it's almost, you can't coach it. You just have to innately know the language of football, or you don't. And he saw the quarterback. And so a lot of guys, their eyes would get as big as saucers and they'd keep rushing over to the quarterback, and the quarterback would just dink the ball over his head. Vinny instinctively stopped and jumped, and the quarterback just had to say, just had to you know, kind of an oh no moment as his arm is going forward and he's releasing the ball into Vinny's outstretched arms, and he batted that down. But that's just kind of knowing the language of football to see that stop and jump, and he batted down that ball. That was an impressive sort of reaction.
So a little more Vinny man crush in week four, more to follow in week five.
Potentially, yes.
All right. There's really nobody that, besides D. Milner, and he doesn't qualify for a mini game ball because he's really coming into his own, as we discussed. And so I guess I'm just going to have to say that I guess I'll have to give it to the linebacker play. I'm really struggling for someone to qualify for a mini game ball. But I think the linebackers, you know, the combination of Trey and CJ and Nico had a good game. But I guess let me just change that to the defense as a whole, because we did have the 8 tackles for loss and the sacks, and they were distributed over 8 and 9 guys. So I'm just going to give a team mini ball to the defense.
I think you're still flustered from your tender moment on DeHart. So that's impressive. I'll say this about Milner, because he was one of the guys that I had marked down. I'll tell you this, maybe we can't give him a mini game ball because he's breaking out, but he is breaking out in such a way, at such a pace. He's going to be an All-America this season. If he continues doing what he's doing, he's going to be an All-America cornerback this season.
Well, he's following in the footsteps of Dre. He wants first round money after his junior year, and he is well on his way.
Indeed. Indeed.
What do you think about the next opponent? We might have the opportunity to talk about this more prior to the game, but what do you think about this Missouri opponent? They kind of had a meet the SEC against South Carolina, and then just you know, barely squeaked out their last week opponent against UCF.
Yeah, they are getting a welcome to the SEC. I think that they had a lineman who is very talented, but I think he popped off talking about old man football. And then, you know, they lost convincingly.
They're playing like old men.
Their home opener and their road opener. They lost both of those convincingly. So they've got an opponent this week, and then we have the opportunity to as a team to travel to Columbia, and I think we will show them another dose of what the SEC is all about. Now, I know that Pinkel and Saban are friends, and so we're not going to, you know, hang a 50 on them or anything, but I think we will see something, you know, maybe 35-10, which number numerically is similar to what we have with the Ole Miss score, but it will feel more like a very similar score that we saw against Michigan. So it's funny how these, we see the same numbers, but we feel differently about them as to how they play out. I think we're going to see something kind of in the middle. All three of those games are going to have similar scores. This one will kind of fill in the middle of those two.
Okay. Well, I'm going to compare us to the opponents that they have played up until this point. You know, offensively, I think we're equal to a Georgia, you know, who put 41 on them. And I think we're a little bit better than South Carolina, who was able to put 31 on them. And so I'm going to say that we're going to do something like a 48, you know, we're going to put 48 on them. I think we're going to hand it to them pretty good. The team's going to get tired of getting their butt kicked after the bye week. But similar to like a South Carolina, you know, who only gave up 10, I think we're gonna give up 10 as well. So I think we're gonna have a 48-10 outcome.
Okay. I think that would be certainly fun to watch. Now this week is gonna go a long ways, and so we're off, and so we get to watch all of this. It's gonna go a long ways to determining some of the positioning, particularly in the SEC West. LSU and Florida are matching up, and Georgia and South Carolina are matching up. And I know we didn't talk or prep anything on this, but what are your thoughts on those two games?
You know, I think Georgia, you know, looked impressive to us
and at times against Tennessee, but I think they're in for an awakening whenever they play South Carolina. You know, that was not an SEC score, the final 51-44. That both teams should be embarrassed that they put up those kind of points in a Georgia-Tennessee game. And so I think we're going to see Tennessee's averaging giving up 30 points a game, where South Carolina's giving up 11. So I think the rubber's going to meet the road. And at South Carolina, I think Georgia's going to lose that game. And I think South Carolina's going to go a long way to having a leg up in the SEC East right now.
I think that, and I've said this is probably the third or fourth year in a row that I've said this, the winner of this game, you know, I think wins the East. And that's been pretty close to being true. I think Georgia probably is the better team, the deeper team, but this, you know, this will see if they've got the, if they can pass muster or not. And so it should be a good game. What do you think about LSU in Florida?
You know, LSU, man, it's like, what the hell? I mean, how do you play Towson? And by the way, no offense, Towson, who the hell is Towson? That game had a very small margin at the beginning of the fourth quarter. They pulled away toward the end of that game to finish 38-22. But LSU, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, man. That quarterback play makes me nervous if I'm LSU, makes me happy to be a Bama fan. I think at Florida, Florida's going to give them everything they want, man. I think that's, in my eyes right now, that's looking like a toss-up game right now.
It really is. And I look at Zach Mettenberger as a liability more than an asset for LSU. And so I would not be surprised. I almost want to call it. I wouldn't be surprised if Florida takes him.
Boy, that'd be fun to see some LSU fans be pretty riled up for the next couple weeks until we kick their butt.
Yes, that would definitely disrupt the apple cart. And what I'm sort of burying the lead, the sort of the critical game in the SEC West standings is Arkansas and Auburn battling it out for the last sixth spot or seventh spot in the SEC West.
Yeah, that'd be great if they lose to Arkansas.
A train wreck losing to a train wreck, right?
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Check us out at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Sign up for our newsletter and get all our updates straight to your email. Thanks for listening. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.